We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Sussex Express, read by Susan Ray.
Irresponsible dog owners have been condemned for turning a local beauty spot into a canine lavatory. The problem was discussed at a meeting of the Landport Bottom Management Committee.
And our thanks to Phil Green for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Rebecca Front. And opposite on my left, Roisin Conaty and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, have a listen to this. Francis, which contentious plans are still on track?
It's HRT.
HRT.
is that what it's called? Something like that. That's the other one, isn't it?
No, I like it. It sounds fast and hot. It's Mazda.
It's HS2?
Yes.
Twice as good as HS1, because HS1 means you can go from, say, London to Birmingham, but under HS2, you can actually go from Birmingham, once you're there, either to Manchester or to Leeds. Hmm? Spot for choice, really, aren't you? And the only problem is it won't happen for another 20 years at least. I think 2033 is the date they've made up as the deadline. And it's going to cost £33 billion, another figure they just made up, because they're having to fill in this form. And they said, how much will it cost? They said, I don't know. It's going to have to be. So it's £33 billion and rising. And you can work on the train. This is a slight flaw in their argument, because they said trains have got to be quicker because people can't work on trains, but actually they all have laptops and mobile phones now, so they love being on trains.
Lots of people can't work on trains. Plasterers, for example.
Yes.
The striking thing, the map of this HRT.
HST.
It? HST.
Yes, no, two. HST. You've got me off there.
The map of the planned route goes...
HS2.
It chugs along in quite a straight line, and then it gets to George Osborne's constituency in Cheshire. And there's this loop, this sort of, well, there's kink in it.
It's only in the expensive bits of George Osborne.
It's only in the edge and places like that where all the Manchester United footballers live, unlike their fans, most of whom live in Tunbridge Wells, obviously. But
I'm a bit worried because it's got two letters and a number, HS2, and you think G4S, A4E, it's going to crash, isn't it?
Do you think the HS2 bank holiday replacement bus will also be twice as fast?
A special connecting gondola service via Venice.
I was just thinking, if the track terminated at the site of the third runway, it would be the single most unpopular place in Britain. It would be absolutely fantastic. £33 billion it's going to cost.
That's what, from London to Manchester?
Yeah.
If you want to travel during a popular
time. Yeah, you've got to book ahead, though.
If you want to travel cheaply, you've just got to travel off-peak and get one of those trains where you run along the side and haul yourself in. Woody Guthrie's sitting there, and some drifters and chickens on the floor.
I think they should try and get cheaper trains as opposed to faster trains.
Yeah.
It's like £157 single to Manchester if you book on the day. And if they took half an hour off that journey, I imagine they think that would give them the right to charge me like a grand to get to Manchester. I'd rather never see Manchester again. I love Manchester, but not a grand's love.
Well, Transport Secretary Patrick McLaughlin said the project was about capacity and not speed. So here's the answer, right? You get one, just build one massive train which starts in London and ends in Leeds. And then you can just decide for yourself how long you want to take to get there. Don't you think?
I think they should turn all the motorways into those conveyors they have in the airports.
Oh.
And then we could just stand on them. Someone should write that down.
Yeah. Nick Clegg said, we can't keep turning a blind eye to the north-south divide in our economy. And you think, poor fellow. Everything he's turning a blind eye to, it's a surprise he's not kneeling next to his desk with his head in a waste paper basket. And I used to be such a fan. The government this week unveiled a proposed route for the new high-speed rail network. The estimated price for the project is £33 billion. The government worked out this estimate by taking the word billion and sticking a random number in front of it. The coalition expected to create 100,000 jobs. They worked this out by taking the phrase 1,000 jobs and sticking a random number in front of it. Until the route is introduced, the fastest way of getting from Birmingham to London is to win the lottery. Oh, there'll be letters. Right. 2 points to Mr. Ween. Rebecca, why might the government be kidding itself about its new proposals?
They've come up with this proposal that there are lots of children that need looking after, and it costs a lot of money to look after them. So somebody has come up with the very clever idea that you should just have the same number of childcarers, but looking after more kids. Mm. And so they've upped the ratio. Now, one childcarer in a nursery, say, can no longer look after just three babies, but four babies, and no longer look after just four two-year-olds, but six two-year-olds. But the SOP for this, the thing that's going to make it all worthwhile, is that the people who are looking after these six toddlers will be better qualified. They'll have to have at least a C-grade GCSE in maths and English. Now, if I can just point out, I have a degree in English. You would not want me looking after even one two-year-old, let alone six. It's a preposterous idea.
Well, what is the thing about the lower grade than a C in English? I mean, what is the child going to do? They can hardly discuss Robert Frost's use of wildlife imagery. I mean,
you know, I know professors of linguistics who can't even look after their own reading spectacles, let alone look, you know, this is just a disastrous thing. This is not what you want from the person looking after your children. I don't care how numerate they are. The only equation you need to know if you're looking after 6 2-year-olds is, you know, Toby plus sharp objects equals concussion. That's the level of education you need. What you actually need is common sense, of course. Which
surely we're moving towards
drugs.
Well, you need to be able to count up to six, I suppose, so that you can count the two-year-olds that you've got. But beyond that, really, you just...
Just measure the length of their arms, because you just need really long arms to keep grabbing kids.
Are there proposals to arm childminders as well?
Yes.
Did you do school trips when your kids were little? Did you?
Yes.
Because I used to literally... They give you a group of four kids, and yeah. I would literally spend the entire day going, 1, 2, 3... OK, I'm not going to get sued. 1, 2, 3, 4. OK. It's just a nightmare. And these were like 9-year-olds or something.
I know. And by the time they were 9, they were all taller than me. So there was a... Hideous. It was hideous. No, not a good time. Nurseries in England are to be allowed to look after more children, with up to 6 children per member of staff. The government hopes it will bring down costs for parents and improve standards. Nursery workers are said to be so unhappy that they are considering not clapping their hands. Nursery staff could earn higher wages by looking after 6 children during the day, with a bonus payment if there are still 6 children at the end. The changes will take effect in England this autumn, but will not apply to Wales, as it takes considerably more skill and expertise to nurse a whale. At 2 points to Rebecca. Roisin, why has the coalition had a borderline collision?
Oh, OK. The review on the constituency boundaries has been rejected in the Commons, and it's the first time Nick Clegg has voted against the Tories. The Lib Dems have voted against the Tories, and the Tories are not pleased. It was really funny, actually. The Tory MP, Penny Mordaunt, I think I'm saying her name right, she said the Lib Dems were motivated by spite, pettiness and self-interest and were making flirtatious glances to Labour. I just like the idea of that's how they flirt. Like, yeah, the Lib Dems sort of done it, I think, because of the House of Lords
were cross about House of Lords reforms.
So, yeah, the Tories have gone mental over it.
You don't want to see in Hansard, and the Tories went mental.
While the Liberals were acting like a right bunch of slappers. Vince Cable teetering around on high heels in a miniskirt.
The Chartists in the mid-19th century, one of the few bits of their programme which hasn't yet been enacted was equal constituencies. And the Liberals say, oh, no, we're not going to do anything because the Tories are going to support it, and so we'll be against it regardless, even though they actually support it.
But this
it's
matters,
doesn't
it?
It's a fine example, statesmanship at its highest.
It's a shame they didn't take the same principled approach to, you know, welfare cuts and all that sort of fees might have been quite nice if they'd sort of...
But it means that the Conservatives might be unlikely to win the next election, is that not right?
Yeah, because it takes 1,000 more people to elect a Tory. I don't know why, just because they're fatter. I don't know why. It's in Labour's interests to keep the boundaries as they are, and the Tories would get 20 more seats if they changed the... It's just pure cynical self-interest.
So does that mean that all Ed Miliband would have to do to lose the next election is, well, be Ed Miliband, but... I mean, that it would be more likely for him to win without these boundaries.
Yeah, it's a grubby, dirty business politics.
Yes.
Gone are the days when men had wing collars and sent poor people to war in a spirit of honour and decency.
Now they're flirting round the House of Commons.
If they redrew them in rude shapes, it would be fine. That would be... Plans to redraw constituency boundaries before 2015 have been rejected in the House of Commons after the Lib Dems joined Labour in voting against their coalition partners. Cameron intended to create new boundaries which would be divided into Conservative safe seats and one giant constituency called the North. Many Conservative MPs are furious at the Lib Dems for betraying them. For many, it's the first taste they've ever had of what it feels like to be a Lib Dem voter. Nick Clegg didn't attend the debate, partly to prevent it getting too heated and partly because it would eat into his staring into the middle distance, wondering where it all went wrong time. 2 points to Roisin. Jeremy, why might the old bill be the young bill?
Well, this is the ongoing war against the police that the coalition is waging. They want to change the way in which police are recruited. It used to be you worked your way up through things and now people move sideways from one profession. You know, basically, like, the people are supposed to have transferable skills. It used to be you started as a constable, then you became sergeant, then detective, and, you know, whatever. And, you know, if you were a magistrate, you'd start out as a control freak, become a school governor. Now what happens is somebody thinks, oh, that person's good at cleaning a sewage works, perhaps they should clean an intensive care unit in the same overalls on the same morning. And so people just move sideways. And people are saying, well, with the police, why not recruit people from other things? They could just pop over from America. You know, they say, well, the governor of the Bank of England is Canadian. You think, yeah, but you don't have to do much if you're governor of the Bank of England. You just have to write a letter to the Chancellor when inflation is more than it's supposed to be. And if you're Canadian, you just say, sorry about inflation, eh? That's how they talk. And but this idea that you could have an American running the cops here, you think, well, it's a completely different system. I mean, for example, we've got different laws. Their police live on donuts. Our police live on bribes from News International. So you can't just think, oh, because I'm Ironside, I can be, you know, Juliet Bravo. It's is that the story, or was it something else?
Yeah.
Actually, I know nothing about the police, but we're very fortunate that Rebecca plays Chief Superintendent Juliet Serpico in popular Oxford-based crime nonsense.
I was
Hamlet
just about
the
to
Prince.
Say that very thing. I think they're overstating how difficult it is, because Kevin Whateley and I have been running the Oxfordshire Police Force now for 7 years.
Yeah, but every
I can
week.
I honestly say it doesn't feel much different to acting.
Every week, the same Oxford scholar is found strangled by ladies' underwear in the Bodleian Library. This happens all the time in Oxford.
Rebecca, if you've already got the frog, could you not actually just take the job now?
I think I might, you know. Yeah. If it goes a bit quiet on the radio panel game front, then, I might just do that. I've always quite fancied the NHS, and I thought, you know, I could maybe go in at consultant neurosurgeon.
Yeah.
In casualty, though.
No, I was thinking
in real life.
Yeah. On the basis that, you know, I have played professional people. I've got the jacket.
Take your glasses off in important ways. Are you going to... Yeah, you can do that.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have hair tied back if I was a consultant neurosurgeon. Well, now I'd have to have the gloves.
Oh, sorry, I got confused. I didn't know you were doing consultant neurosurgeon. I thought you were doing police commissioner.
If I do police...
Are they very different?
If I do superintendent innocent for
yes,
you
please,
now.
Yes, please, yeah.
We need to get this sorted.
Oh!
Works every time.
It's immensely impressive, I must say. Do the police actually advise? Do they come round and say, don't sit on your desk with your legs apart or whatever?
Did I do that then in one episode?
What do they give
advice? No, they do. They do advise on, you know, you wouldn't handle evidence like that and you'd know that bit before you knew that bit. And tell me if I get too technical.
It was a very good statement by Ian Johnston, who's the Gwent Police Crime Commissioner. He warned against parachuting someone in with no policing experience. You think, well, it's much more dangerous parachuting somebody in with no parachuting experience. Slightly overstated. Would you fancy being a policeman, Francis? Do you think it'd be a nice thing?
My younger brother was a policeman for many years.
Oh, right.
P.C. Ween. He had this patch in the centre of London around Piccadilly Circus. Half of it was Soho strip clubs and vice clubs and dens and things. Mm. So he just switched from, you know, the Tunnels of Love in Windmill Street, which were selling videos they claimed were hardcore porn, but actually weren't. They were Bruce Lee Kung Fu movies. He prosecuted them under the Trade Descriptions Act. I've got them either way. If they're selling stuff as hardcore as they claim, I'll do the one of the obscene publications, and if they're not, I'll do them sale of goods, trade descriptions. That was his finest hour in court. It appeared in The Sun, the report of this thing, headed, Not Kinky, But Chinky. those were the days before The Sun became a reformed, thoughtful, liberal...
Yes. Home Secretary Theresa May has launched a consultation on plans to overhaul police recruitment, including a fast-track scheme which could see chief constables as young as 30. President of the Police Superintendents Association, Derek Barnett, said he couldn't think of any comparators in any other professions where he would bring people in at senior level who've got no experience, no training and no qualifications. You're listening to the BBC. End of round one. The scores are Francis and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Roisin and Jeremy. We start round two with an excerpt from the website of the Howard House Nursing Home.
All the rooms are slightly different. Some have full-on suites. Others have doors which open onto the garden.
Thanks to Margaret Nirop for sending us that. Francis, why should we polish up our Polish?
Well, it's the Poles. Mm. You rather gave it away in the question, I'm sorry to say.
I feel a fool now.
The good old Poles, they've come from nowhere to number two in the hit parade in the space of about 10 years. The recent census shows that I think 550,000-odd of them are here. They come over here with their consonants, taking our vowels. Anyway, they were assimilated very nicely, very well. They seem quite popular. Although not with the Daily Express, I don't think. The Daily Express had a front page thing saying 4 million people in Britain don't speak English. And I think they slightly misread these figures. Actually, just over 100,000 don't speak English. And it doesn't mean that the Express said they're all immigrants. Actually, a lot of them are people like John Prescott, but...
So Andrew Green, who's a funny chap, he's a nice man, but he runs a thing called Migration Watch, which is a bit paranoid about migration. He said many Londoners don't recognise, you know, their own city anymore. And it's true, because you walk around the East End, I tell you what, the Huguenots are all gone now. You can't find a weaver anywhere. The Lombards are gone, the Flemings are gone. Since the polls come, I look out my window in South London, there's hardly a black face out there anymore.
What's your background, Rishi? What's your family background?
Irish. Both parents are Irish, they met over here. But I'd always be scared that if I traced it back, I'd just sort of end up in, you know, that show, Who Do You Think You Are? They'd just open like a drawer at the end, it'd just be a potato.
there's 138,000 people who took the census said they didn't understand English at all. And you think, how did they read the form? How did... Poles, of course, have been a fixture of British life since their inclusion in the May Day celebrations, so it's a long time. It's my show.
I went to one of their pole dancing clubs.
Did you?
I was quite surprised about how many Polish women are firefighters. I had no idea.
Data from the 2011 census shows Polish has become England's second language, or rather, Danzi Spitzus, Gutsche Polska, Stadt Drutki Dritzke. Or in Danish, data fra den 2011 census viser, at Polska er nu Englands andet sprog. I'm just trying to piss off UKIP in case they're listening. Polish has many different dialects, of course. Regular Polish is totally different from South Polish. That's much colder and largely spoken by penguins.
Myself, really.
This news has sparked the usual scare stories about the floodgates opening and Eastern Europeans pouring in. But to be fair, it will have been the Eastern Europeans who mended the floodgates in the first place. The English actually have a lot in common with the Polish, a hard drinking culture, a love of meat, and a reluctance to live in Poland. Two points to Francis. Sheen, why might you now be able to break your criminal record?
The Court of Appeal.
Yes.
Has said that blanket CRB checks for employees was unlawful and a breach of the right to a private and family life. There's a couple of cases. A guy named, who went by the name of T, said that when he was 11, he stole two bikes, and that was on his record and stopped him getting employment as an adult. I think it's more to do with the fact that he goes by the name of T. It's going to draw suspicion. Another lady stole some false nails from Superdrug, and 10 years later she tried to get a job as a carer and she couldn't. And she said she would have made an excellent carer. I don't know why that's funny. The thing is, she was in her 30s or 40s when she stole the nails. I think it's quite hard for employers, because it's still theft and that's on the list. But obviously when you're 11, there's a difference. There was a third person, actually, who went to the Court of Appeal, and that person wanted to join the armed forces but was involved in a carjacking that left a man dead when she was 16. She failed in her appeal. The idea...
She killed somebody and she's not allowed to join the army.
Yeah.
Basically, it's small crimes, isn't it?
And also cautions, obviously, because it's innocent until proven guilty. If you haven't actually gone to court, it shouldn't be on your record. I'm worried, because when I was 9, I had a very big argument with my mum in Camden Town, because she was reneging on a trip to Margate. And I ran off and was picked up by the police, who I then told my name was Lucy and I lived in Margate. Driven to Margate, my friends. True story.
You were bright. I mean, if you were 9 and using words to your mother like renege... the Court of Appeal has concluded that forcing people to disclose even minor past convictions to employers as part of a CRB check is in breach of their human rights. The man at the centre of this case had previous warnings in connection with missing bicycles. He claimed they had no relevance in his current search for work. The court agreed, and he's now free to open his second-hand bicycle shop. Human rights campaigners said that minor offences should be forgotten. The campaign is supported by many 1970s celebrities. Can only push you so far. The man who challenged CRB checks is known only as T. Faced with a full disclosure of offences from years ago, Mr. T escaped from a maximum security stockade. And now survives as a soldier of fortune. 2 points to Roisin. Jeremy, what illegal practice is the government hoping to put an emergency stop to?
Apparently, every day, 5 people get a friend to take the driving test for them. And now driving examiners are wise to this, because this man is turning up constantly in different disguises for these 5 people. And they say, well, but Mrs. Patel, didn't you sit the test 2 hours ago under the name of Rabbi Emanuel Hershkowitz?
That is a giveaway if the examiner bangs his hand on the dashboard and the driver's moustache falls off.
Driving test used to be all right, because it'd be, can you drive? And you'd say, yeah. And they'd say, look at that. Can you see it? You'd say, yeah, I can see that. And then, and I took my driving test 3 times, and I passed it every time. So I know what, I know what I'm talking about. But you see, my daughter's a really good driver, but she can't pass because of the theory now. And you think, why theory? You have to sit an exam, and you say things like, increased car use due to the decline of public transport in rural areas has broken down social interaction and caused reduced class solidarity. Discuss. You think it's not... what are the dialectics of parking in Hegelian and post-Hegelian philosophy? It shouldn't be like that. It should just be, can you put a handbrake on in a hill? Yeah, you can. What's the right place to put toffees in your car?
I think I would pay someone to take my driving test. So I'm just scanning the audience.
Have you not passed your test yet?
No, I took lessons for so long that I saw my driving instructor through 2 pregnancies. when her second child was two, I thought, this isn't working, is it? No, I mean, this is now becoming a hobby.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I got a friend to help me with my driving test. She did the pedals, I did the steering. It was... genuinely, I passed my driving test on my 18th birthday. And a small child ran out from behind a milk float. In those days, there were milk floats. And I did an emergency stop and didn't kill the child. And the driving instructor turned to me and said, congratulations, you've passed your test. And I said, oh, that's absolutely marvellous. I paid the kid £5. It was well worth... Just recommend it. Don't actually kill them, because it doesn't look good. But...
Honestly, I had a driving examiner. This is absolutely true. He said to me, and in what circumstances would you not indicate? And I said, I don't know. And he said, if there's nobody about. Honestly.
What?
He said, if there's nobody about, you don't need to bother. Honestly.
No, that's ridiculous. See, do you know, this is where I get really grumpy. I get... the number of people who treat the indicator like some optional extra on the car. Statistics released by the Driving Standards Agency have revealed that around 5 learners a day try to cheat their way to a driving licence by sending someone else to take their test for them. This is true, apparently. One cheat was found out when he was asked to identify possible hazards, and he said, well, I suppose if you found me out, I could be sent to jail. The statistics were confirmed by a spokesman for the Driving Standards Agency. At least, I think it was him. It could have been his mate, Dave. 2 points to Jeremy. At the end of round two, the scores are Roisin and Jeremy have got 8 points, but Francis and Rebecca are in the lead with 9. We start round three with an extract from the Fairlight Parish Council Minutes.
There have been complaints about the amount of dog mess in Channel Way. The Parish Council will step in.
And our thanks to Dave Minnett for sending us that. Francis, which artist is desperate not to be discovered?
It's the man in Milton Keynes.
It is the man in Milton Keynes.
Who has got an exhibition on there. And to try and drum up publicity for it, he announced that he had hidden a cheque for £8,000 somewhere in the gallery. And anyone who found it could keep it and pay it in. He said it's all the money he's got, but it's worth doing because it's for art. Except that the staff at the gallery... looked around, they had a really thorough search after he'd announced this, and they said they couldn't find any checks there at all, so he might possibly be being a bit creative, as artists will.
But it has increased footfall at the gallery considerably, hasn't it? For which reason I think we should actually hide this week's lottery numbers in the script for this show.
That's very good.
Or you play it backwards. Listen. You play it backwards and you get the devil announcing the winning numbers.
There was an artist, I'm trying to remember his name now, when the Museum von Art in New York had its very first Van Gogh exhibition, he was very cross that everybody was going to look at all his paintings, and so he got some corned beef, and he made an ear, and he put Van Gogh's ear, and he managed to get into the Museum von Art and hang this up, and it got more viewers than any painting in the thing.
We went to see, my partner and I went to see Jeremy Deller's wonderful exhibition on the South Bank last year, and there was a section which was sectioned off with like those hazard barriers you get on the motorway, and then there was a bucket with some water dripping into it, and we stood there quite a long time looking at this installation before we realised that it smelt of raw sewage. And it came from the lavatories on the floor above.
Are you an artist, Roisin? Did you do art?
No. No. I did GCSE art as well. We were allowed to choose. I chose fireplaces. The most boring 3 months of my life. I'd done well in it. The teacher, we'd like fireplaces as well.
So could you just choose whatever you wanted to draw it?
You had to do a sort of a project. You could choose whatever it wanted to be.
Yeah, and you chose fireplaces.
Not even like a theme, sort of esoteric, just fireplaces.
Yeah.
There you go, loads of them.
Were they lit? Was it flames?
Some of them were lit.
Some
I like to
flames.
Spice it up. Some were flames. My favourite one was I did it just a gas fire, and my teacher, I don't know if it counts, but it does count in council houses. A And so she gave me the grade.
Visitor numbers have soared to Milton Keynes Art Gallery after artist Thomas Georgeson claims to have hidden a cheque for £8,000 as part of his current exhibition there. The last time anyone looked this hard for a cheque was when Martina Navratilova overslept at the 1993 US Open.
We're nothing if not topical this
Thank you very much. Some members of the public are concerned that if the cheque isn't there, they will have spent tedious hours walking around the gallery for nothing. Not very familiar with the concept of art, are they? 2 points to Francis. Rebecca, listen to this.
London Bridge is falling down, falling down, falling down. London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
Rebecca, why were people at London Bridge falling down?
They were too hot. Because we've had a cold snap. I can't quite believe
I love
this
story.
Actually happened. We've had a cold snap in London, and so people were wrapping up warm. And then it got warmer. And people carried on wrapping up warm. And then they went on the train, and it's quite hot. And they didn't take their coats off. And they collapsed. But, yeah, two or three people collapsed at London Bridge Station, and they thought initially it was a terrorist
They evacuated the station.
And there was talk of a gas leak. They thought maybe it was like a sarin attack or something. But no, it was just people with their winter woolies on.
I love this. Health Protection Agency guidelines state that if three people become ill and the cause is not known, they should not be approached. Now, how are you going to know what the cause is?
I think it's a sign that the weather is treacherous. Because when they say there'll be treacherous weather, I always think, no, I think you're overthinking the motives of the weather, really. I don't think you're trying to ascribe egregious intent to basically a cold snap. My mum always said that the weather is deceptive. She'd say things like, oh, you can get sunburnt, you can, even when it's cloudy at night and you're indoors with a duffel coat on, you can still get sunburnt.
It is very easy to have completely the wrong clothes on a train. You know, sometimes by the time I've reached my destination, everything I'm wearing has gone out of fashion.
That's why it says you have to always have to change at Camden, because it's just so fashionable.
Sometimes it's so packed. I've been on a train before where it's so packed that I know I need to take my coat off, but you've got no room to sort of go, sorry, start unzipping, pull that for me, mate. You know, sort of pull the... Actually, once before, you know, and you've got your scarf on so tight and you're so hot that I just started panicking. I went, help me, help me. But I couldn't get my hands up. The tube was that. And then a man unwrapped me. Scarf, like, to just carry on. So I think that's probably what it is. I think people, if they're feeling that hot, I mean, just logic means that the trains are too busy.
I feel really guilty now.
In the summer, they give you instructions on the underground, don't they? They say, always carry a bottle of water and some cucumber slices for your eyes. Have a young Egyptian boy with a huge palm frond to waft you while you're sitting here, because you might get a touch of the vapours. My, it's feverish hot today. I fancy a mint julep on the veranda. I'm mixing my literary styles here.
I'm sure I've told the story before, but it's my favourite story about hot weather. I had a friend of mine who was very convinced that the way... We used to play a lot of golf together, and... lesbian. And... she said, I've got this brilliant thing. She said, what I do is I put a flannel in a plastic bag and I put it in the freezer and then I put it in my bag when I'm going to play golf. And by the time we've been around half a round, I take it out. It's absolutely lovely. I stick it on my face. So I said, oh, it's a very good idea. So she was waiting to take her shot. So she looked at me and she was rather smiling. And she opened her bag and she opened this thing. And she put a place...
You're hysterical. I shall have to strike you in a moment.
dreadful. Right. London Bridge Station had to be evacuated this week after several people became ill. After the evacuation, many suspected a terrorist attack, but it was soon discovered that poorly passengers had simply overheated in their winter coats. Oh, it's like another gripping episode of Spooks. Barely conscious, clammy and pale, station workers quickly ran to passengers' aid. 2 points to Rebecca. Roisin, why might wearing your pants over your trousers make you a better person?
Oh, OK, this is the story where pretending to be a superhero makes people act like a superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 points. There we go.
They did, like, virtual thingy tests on computers, and in one of them they had to put their arms in the air and imagine they were flying like Superman. And then after that, they knocked some pencils over, and the one... This is true. And then the ones that had been Superman responded more quickly to the immediate world-threatening crisis of some pencils not being... ones who hadn't.
You were either Superman flying or you were a helicopter passenger. And then what they discovered is the people who had been Superman were more likely to pick the pencils up than the people in the helicopter. Although, to be fair, I don't think the people in the helicopter would have been able to see the pencils, so I found the whole thing rather confusing. But it was a simulation.
Sounds like a really bad simulation.
Who was your favourite superhero when you were a kid?
She-Ra.
I don't even know who that is.
She-Ra was He-Man. You know He-Man and She-Ra?
No.
Am I right? It's one person that back. She-Ra was like the female He-Man.
I don't...
She-Ra! Thanks, guys.
It's not really helping. Who's He-Man?
By the power of Grayskull!
Is that just you, or is that what He-Man used to say?
I liked Pippi Longstocking. She was, she could lift a horse above her head. Why you'd want to, I don't know. She had her own porch, which I liked very much.
Her own porch?
Porch, she had a porch, you know.
Her porch, I thought it was a paunch.
And she had her own paunch.
I thought it was she had her own Porsche.
A study suggests that pretending to be a superhero can make you behave like one in real life. Volunteers in a virtual reality simulator who pretended to be superheroes were then more likely to help pick up some dropped pens. Do you not think it's a bit of overkill? You don't need a superhero, you need a desk tidy. Unfortunately, while the superheroes were busy picking up the pens, a woman falling from a tall building plummeted to her death. 2 points to He-Man. Roisin. Jeremy, why does doing DIY mean men might have to do it themselves?
I read a peculiar story that said that relationships are better where men pull their weight in the home, but it said that men who do more manly chores have more sex with their wives than men who help out with, like, washing up and stuff. It's all awash with stereotypes, the idea of what's manly and what isn't, the idea that putting up shelves is a man's job, which is ridiculous. It's obviously a lesbian's job. I mean, you know, if I need anything doing around the house, I sit watching musicals and Sandy comes round with her drill. I've never thought that just because I'm a man, it means that I should know how to use a rool plug. I mean, and for one thing, it's scabbing. DIY is scabbing. There are craftspeople out of work... You know, having to just stare out the window all day because of practical people nicking their work, doing DIY.
And if they can't get work, they can't get sex. So it's a double whammy. I think there's some truth in it, actually, because I met at a charity event this week TV handyman Tommy Walsh, and he was looking ever so tired. Oh.
So the men who do housework don't get sex, is that the...
I think they get some. But
maybe they don't want to have sex because they realise they're going to have to wash the sheets after. Are you good around the house, Francis? Are you a man?
I'm still wondering why Jeremy doesn't apply the scabbing principle to the other household chores. Or perhaps you do. I mean, do you employ a chef?
No, because that's just normal stuff. That's not
what about
industrial.
I mean, if you do your own butling, that is putting a butler out of
work. Oh, no, you've got a point there. I have put tweenie maids out of work. That's true.
I think this story's dangerous because basically you're going to have loads of divvy men who don't know what they're doing, based on this story now, running around with drills and electrics. Anyone who's, you know, going through a dry spell in their relationship, you know, half drunk and, you know, can't even read, and now they're running around trying to build stuff. Terrible, terrible.
You don't want a lover who's a DIY nut, because you'd be lying there, you know, expectantly in bed in your sexy nighty, and he approaches you, gets his spirit level out, make sure you're lying properly flat.
I have to say, the whole thing was a bit odd, because it really wasn't that significant. Marriages where the wife did all the traditionally female tasks had sex about 1.6 times more per month than average. Who wants to have sex? 0.6. It's very unpleasant.
I suppose it depends which 0.6 you're talking about.
You've been married a long time, haven't you?
My husband does no DIY.
Does he? Research by sociologists at the University of Washington has found that men who take on traditionally female chores end up having a less active sex life than men who do less to help around the house. Academic researchers who carried out the study have found that men doing masculine activities have more sex and that academic researchers have no sex at all. It's clearly no good trying to reinvent gender roles. As the old saying goes, nature abhors a man with a vacuum. Such a Radio 4 joke, isn't it? Find that on the Chris Evans Show. Now, before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Ween.
Thanks very much to Alan Glorm for this. It's a traffic report from the Oxford Mail website last week. A34 Oxfordshire, road closed and queuing traffic due to shed load of beer.
Ms. Front.
This was sent in by Pam Webster, and it's from Living magazine. To celebrate the launch of new Saks Scotch Corner Sedbury Hall salon, we would like to invite 20 lucky clients for a free cut at the new salon. Please call for details. First come, first severed.
Ms. Gonnerty.
This was sent from Patrick McInerney. It's an email from Bexley's Council, and it says, Bexley Council's planned school governors training session planned for the 22nd of January on the topic of emergency planning has been cancelled due to the bad weather.
Mr. Hardy.
This is sent in by Mrs. Karen Salisbury from Rochdale. Firm plays chicken with workers' pay, and there's a sentence in it that says, members voted almost unanimously for strike action after the company's original paltry offer.
Let's take a look at the final score. Roisin and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Francis and Rebecca with 13. Before we leave you, here is a clipping from the Irish Catholic.
Father Tony Flannery claimed that he's been silenced by the Vatican for supporting women priests. I've been ordered not to engage with the media, he told a press conference in Dublin.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Queen, Rebecca Front, Roisin Connaughty and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair's script was written by John Luke Roberts, Carl Carter and Andy Walton, with additional material by Tom Neenan. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.